Hello, everyone, and welcome to our monthly Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology office hours. It's February 2019, and these are the calls where you can come to get answers to your questions about whatever program you happen to be in. At this point, we have a bunch of people in the Digestive Mastery, handful in the Insulin Resistance, and a whole lot in Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training Certification. So put in your questions in the box if you would like to. The Q&A box, you have a choice of that on your slide, or you can put your hand up and I'll open up your line. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the questions that were typed in advance, and then I see Eleanor has her hand up so far. Okay. So what I appreciate when you ask a question, whether you type it or whether you ask it on the phone, is just state what program you're in so I know what access you have and what resources you have available to you to guide you if I need to answer your question. So the first question came in from Leah about an hour before the event, and she has a 52-year-old female concerned with long-term B12 deficiency, possibly nerve damage can repair. So let me read the whole thing and then I'll come back. Will pulsing currently experiencing subside? She's having pulsing once nutrient status improves. An attempt to improve absorption, methylene hydroxy introduced and gives head and neck ache within 15 minutes. What could this be? I'm just going to read it and I'll come back to the rest of it. So 52-year-old, so if she's had a long-standing B12 deficiency, whether or not the nerve damage is permanent, it just depends. There's no way for us to know because we can't see inside. We can't actually examine the nerves. If it's been deficient for a very long time, it is possible that there's some residual nerve damage that won't be reversed. So there's really no way to tell. But typically, when I've supplemented people, especially if it's just been a short period of time, and my son is one of these. He had a deficiency when he was a teenager. It was noticed when he was a teenager. And we supplemented his B12. We tested, he was low. We tested with methylmalonic acid because serum B12 is not accurate. And we found that he was deficient, and we supplemented him, and within 3 months, the test came back normal, and all the symptoms went away, the tingling and all, and in feet and hands, mostly feet for him. So it's possible. And you're saying, well, pulsing currently experiencing, I'm not sure if that's what she's feeling, pulsing. The typical symptoms of B12 deficiency would be tingling feeling. And you're from England, so maybe that tingling is the same, because sometimes you guys have different words than we do. Excuse me. I swallowed wrong. Yeah, so if you mean the tingly feeling and, you know, some numbness and tingling in the extremities, that, you know, oftentimes that does, it will take some time. So she said an attempt to improve absorption, methylene hydroxy introduction gives headache and neck ache within 15 minutes. Okay, so it could be that there are some genetic issues going on where methyl groups aren't handled real well. Depends on the dose you gave. So with any kind of B12 supplementation, especially if I don't know their genetics and I don't know if they have any specific methylation issues, then I go really slowly. So I would say start with a liquid form where you can do tiny, tiny drop doses. And I would recommend that you get a hydroxy form, and you can also get a methyl form. The methyl, you're going to have to be super careful with. So I would start with just the hydroxy. I would do it not in the 2,000 milligram dose that a lot of these come in, but a very small dose and build up and see if it's that. So it might be the methyl is what I'm suspicious of. So you're going to have to go slowly, small amounts. I usually get methyl B12 in a liposomal form. A couple of companies have them. My favorite, Seeking Health. There's other companies that also have them. And I give one drop. With Seeking Health, the one drop is only about 30 to 50 micrograms, which is a very small dose. So you can start small and you can increase it up. A lot of people have sensitivities to B vitamins for whatever reason is going on in their system, and you do need to go slowly. I had one person who we had a liquid B12 supplement that was pretty low dose. I mean, a dropper full was maybe you know, it was a fraction of what a typical B12 would be or a B vitamin would be. But she got headaches. She got all icky. She didn't feel good. So what we did was we had her make a dilution, almost like a homeopathic dilution, but we had her get an empty bottle, a little 1 ounce, 1 ounce kind of tincture bottle. And we had her put one dropper full in that bottle, just one day's dose. And then we had her fill the rest of the bottle up. And the goal was to see how much she could tolerate without getting symptoms. And when she did like one or two dropperfuls of the diluted, she was fine. And she started to see improvement and she was able to gradually increase it. But we had to start really slow. So that's what I would recommend with you. She's in perimenopause, though not experiencing any particular symptoms related to this. Experiences increased pulse rate and general pulsing sensation throughout the body any time of day after eating. Whenever I hear that, I'm thinking there may be some food sensitivities, and I would put her on an elimination diet to try to figure out what that is. Throbbing on her left rib side, not good with fats or sugar. She shouldn't be eating fats or sugar, right? So, oh my God, A1C is in 22. Oh, wait, that's England and mid-range. I don't know what that converts to. Lynn, maybe if you can pull up a converter online and just convert 22 to see what that is. So I would know. 4 months ago, diagnosed with celiac and gastritis, all grains removed, diet dressing, no eggs.
She's also on the phone. Her hand is raised.
Okay, we'll get there. Wondering how long it will villi. Yeah, it'll take a long time for the villi to, you don't need any more testing, Leah. You absolutely don't need any more testing. What you do need is to have her be very, very vigilant about a leaky gut protocol. So all in CMDS. I don't know if that's the program you're in, but it's all there in CMDS. And have her go through a very vigilant process of the elimination. She may have some other foods that you may have to eliminate all as well. I would look into cross-reactive foods. Cyrex Labs does a cross-reactive foods to gluten, and there may be some other things in there. But it sounds to me like she's having a sensitivity, hypersensitivity reaction, possibly allergy, possibly other type of hypersensitivity when her pulse rate goes up and she gets that pulse rate. I'm not sure why you think she has the B12 deficiency, but let me talk to you on the phone real quick. Okay, so hand up. Where are you? Is that the 448? Okay. See if you can, I hit the button and I'm afraid to hit it again because it might mute you, but I hit the button to unmute you and it doesn't seem like it's doing it. So I'm going to try again. Okay, you're unmuted. Go ahead and speak, Leah. Let's see if we can hear you. No, I'm not hearing you. Oh, there you are.
Hello.
Hi there. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. It sounds like you have an interesting case here. So I have a few questions for you. One is, what makes you think that she has a B12? Is it just symptomatic or has she had any testing?
No. I can't even think. Testing has proven. So from an amino acid testing, which tested 46 amino acids, was one of the first things that pointed at folate B12 and many, many deficiencies. And then it was actually a situation of landing in hospital, which actually turned out to be gastritis, not that they knew that at the time, because muscles and everything went into spasm. But yes, no, it's definitely B12 deficient. But as I said, trying very, very gently, and that was breaking open a methyl cobalamin capsule and literally a tiny, tiny percentage of the powder, so even like a quarter of it to... It was probably 200 micrograms, was just way too much. So
yeah, too much. And do you know any genetics? Because you might want to look at that to see, like a 23andMe testing, if she has any of the particular contraindications to going fast with the methyl. But it sure sounds like that. Did you try the hydroxy alone?
Interestingly, tried hydroxy as sublingual, but... Funnily enough, because I'm in the UK, having then looked at them, they've got multidextrose, and actually one of the one things that was before getting into sort of looking at your program was by eliminating all grain, including pseudograins, everything, making sure nothing passed sort of the lips, actually calmed everything down. But then went more into a Well, I think because trying to eat too many, interestingly, even prebiotic vegetables and things like that, actually sent the gut off, and it just kind of went a bit bananas. So now we've been following your SIBO, or the adapted program, so that actually limit those vegetables, and that's really calmed everything down wonderfully again. The thing now is, as I said, is because I think it's been put into her mind about type 1 being a possibility of the failure of the pancreas, given how the celiac, and not that she worries about that, but it's more a case of this pulsing has been more of a new thing, and it's almost like the pancreas is struggling. So when they had done the HbA1c and he said, oh, no, that's fine, middle of the road, you're okay. You know, it's, and the pulsing, definitely, the pulsing happens after pretty much every eating. So that's definitely something going on there. Fats, when I say fats, I mean avocados. I don't mean bad fats.
Yeah, so she's eating, it sounds like she's eating a pretty healthy diet. Here's some of the things I would test for in terms of the pancreas. I think that I would test insulin, first of all, fasting insulin, and then postprandial, meaning like about 45 minutes after she eats.
Right.
Okay, that's going to tell you. And then there's C-peptide, which tells you pancreatic capacity for producing insulin. All right, and to see where those are. Now, if there's something off in those, there's further testing you can do to see if there's any antibodies you can look at, because, you know, celiac is an autoimmune disease, so is type 1 diabetes, but it might be a case of LADA, which is latent autoimmune diabetes of adulthood. But I would just do, those are expensive tests, like running those are several hundred dollars. The insulin you can run fairly inexpensively. Somebody just recently ordered a kit from Alta, I think. I don't remember who, whether she did it that way or some, anyway, I usually just, you can't do that. You're in the UK. Never mind. You just have to get somebody to test her insulin. So get her doctor to order an insulin test somehow.
Okay.
And I would ideally, like, you know, you can just do the first insulin, the fasting insulin, and see what it is. And if it's super low, then we still have to look at pancreatic function, and then we want to see a postprandial. But if it's high, we know it's not a type 1 situation, and that she might have a type 2 type situation, or, you know, is leading there with insulin resistance.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. And do you think then, sorry, just one thing back onto the nerve thing, and that was, do you think that having had, obviously, sadly, not knowing, I'm coping with it very well, obviously, for a long time, celiac or certainly gluten sensitivity, whichever way you want to look at it, but ultimately, if that would, there's the potential there for nerve damage, and do you think that that would, is that what's showing, or do you just think maybe it's the hypersensitivity going on?
It sounds more, it's usually a tingling sensation, like a numbness, tingling, paresthesia it's called, in the extremities, or the feeling like you're just, your feet just go to sleep and you have to shake them out. Especially
this is more like a pulsing, a throbbing, like throughout
I mean, you certainly have to address the B12 deficiency. But it's, you know, it's going to have to go slow. I would highly recommend see if you can get a smaller amount. And also with capsules, if it's capsules, you don't know if she's having a sensitivity to something in the capsule, a filler, a binder. You know, it sounds like you didn't give her the capsule itself. You just gave her the powder from it. So, you have to look at that. There's a company in England called Metabolics that has liquid versions of all of the B vitamins. I mean, I even have people sometimes order it from here, even with the extra shipping, it's well worth it, because we don't have any companies here that just has a full line of all the different Bs in liquid form.
I just wonder though, whether they put citric acid or, is it palmitate? Basically, that's from...
I don't recall them now. They maybe... That's something to call the company and find out for sure. Hey, we have somebody super sensitive. But I remember when I first investigated them, it was, like, exciting that I found something that didn't have... Polysorbate is another one that they often put in there, potassium sorbate. One, benzoic acid, is the one that I totally caution against avoiding as a preservative and things.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. Well, I'll look at those. Thank you very
much. Yeah. Look at those. And then in terms of, the pancreas we talked about, in terms of the, it's going to take a while. It could take a year if she's had undiagnosed celiac for a long time, but you want to be doing all the different things to support all the different pieces. A lot of, whatever she can tolerate in terms of, things that repair. Mucilaginous sometimes doesn't work if she also has like SIBO going on, which is not uncommon to have a SIBO situation going on. So just, you're going to have to move really slowly with her. It's slow and slow, tiny drop doses, and just build it up.
Okay. And, yeah. and obviously goes with that fatigue because obviously there's, because of low everything. So yeah, it is complex. And the only other thing I was going to say, there's a liquid, would you think liquid minerals, as in that would be, it's providing it doesn't have anything else in it, would be the, because of the lack of having to digest it, I'm thinking.
Absolutely, liquid minerals. I mean, there's several combination ones that are folic acid based. You know, may or may not do well with those. There's a company called Sun Warrior has something called Liquid Light, and that's a combination of different things. You might want to look at that. But then there's also Trace Minerals Research and Good State have a whole series of individual ones. It sounds like she's a sensitive person, so unfortunately you may have to work with that, but you might try one of the combination formulas in tiny, tiny drop doses and build her up to see if she tolerates. And if not, then, you know, what are the most pressing minerals? Zinc. Zinc comes to mind. Zinc and magnesium are the critical ones. They're all important, obviously, but those are the ones that are most easily out of balance.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, lovely. You're welcome. I hope that helps.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Great. You're welcome.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye. All right.
So I did want to say I looked at the metabolics, and it just had purified water along with the whichever cobalamin.
Beautiful.
So it looks pretty pure, and I put the link in the chat.
Mm. Thank you. Yeah, I've been impressed with what they offer. I wish they were over here. What else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, did you happen to look up the A1C to see what the range? It was 5. She said 22, and I don't know what that means in terms of U.S. units. If you can look that up, I'd be curious.
I did, and so they've switched over over in the U.K., so it actually was saying it was 4.2. So I'm going to keep looking, but
that sounds a little low. I've never seen anybody with a 4. I've seen people with 4.8, but I've never seen anybody with 4.2. And I don't think the doctor would have said it's in the – it's in the low range, in the mid range.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And also you want to look at fasting insulin and get her to get a glucose meter just to check her glucoses after eating to see how her body's responding. I mean, I would not be thinking of type 1 diabetes with anything, you know, even a high range, high normal range, even a 5.6, maybe she's on the verge, but type 1, I would tend to think that you're going to see much higher levels of glucose, which would drive that A1C up for sure. But again, it's gathering the information. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. I don't know who put this one in, but it was, let's see. Oh yeah. Gail. Here we go. 72-year-old female, 40 years, has same constant pain on the right below the rib, the liver gallbladder area, controlled with various diets. She thinks liver gallbladder, but never diagnosed. She's in a liver cleanse, can't tolerate fat, now eating little, losing weight, thin, meditates, can't do ACV, memory loss, gas, keratosis, history. Yeah, so where to start? Look, sounds like she's been through a lot. I would be making sure, is she gluten-free? Because gluten has long-term effects on the liver and the gallbladder area. I would be looking at, you know, all the basics first, right? You've got to make sure that her diet's good, that she's chewing her foods well. It sounds like she's meditating. I mean, on the surface, it sounds like that. And of course, she's eating very little because it hurts when she eats. 40 years of pain that doesn't, it's just unbelievable. But really, it's a matter of finding the right diet. So if it's controlled with various diets, she needs to find that diet that controls it with. Make sure she's doing all the digestive hygiene I talk about, which is the chewing and doing the appreciation and a little meditation before she eats. I would say you want to make sure the rest of the gut is healed too. Is she producing enough enzymes? Bitters come to mind as a really good support that you take about 10, 15 minutes before eating because it stimulates all the digestive juices in addition to the stomach acid. It also stimulates the liver and the gallbladder. I'm happy that she's kept her gallbladder all these years because most of the time if you present to a Western medical doctor, with 40 years of constant pain, they're going to just yank it out. If she's not looked into, you know, some sort of a therapeutic diet, you know, some protein powders and things like that to just help without seeing her labs to see if she has any, enzyme elevations, any indications of fatty liver. It's hard to say, but that's what I would look at. I would be looking and doing some blood labs to see if she has any indications of fatty liver on that blood lab. So that's, you know, I would start at the beginning without, you know, with very little history. I don't know what exactly you're going to go, but I would look at that. I would look at the gluten issue. I would look at, is she eating dairy products? What is she eating that could be potential allergens and aggravants as well? So more information needed, but I think I gave you some good starting points. All right. Eleanor.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I can.
Hi, everybody. Hi. Hi. I have been working with several people, and several of them have a common complaint about a common issue that I'm trying to work with but not having much luck, and that is gas. And I wanted to, you know, I've done all the digestive hygiene, telling them, you know, to chew, to pause before eating, all sit down, not on the run, all that kind of stuff. But they still seem to have gas. And one of the interesting things is I've suggested to several people to go on probiotics thinking that would help with gas. And actually then I took them off the probiotics to see if the gas got less, and it did. So, I mean, what do you think I should be doing here?
Well, there's a lot. Okay, so, you know, if people are on probiotics and having gas, it could be that they're not on a good probiotic for them, and it may be aggravating and feeding the wrong kinds of stuff and creating an imbalance. I would say, you know, looking at stomach acid is huge for that. I'm assuming that you did food elimination diet, eliminating all the aggravants for gut.
Yeah, and that is really what's started the problem. I mean, one person, she had the problem before, and now her gas is less smelly. But it's the new diet that is getting them on the healthy diets with the more fruits and vegetables, that kind of stuff, that kind of started the problem for them.
Yeah, so it sounds like they're not digesting well, that they're not handling fiber well, and you're going to have to go slowly with them. So I would be, and are you saying that they are off, like gluten, dairy, corn, you know, all the aggregates?
All that stuff, and I was concerned about not digesting, whether I should do digestive enzymes, but I didn't want to add another thing to the mix. And I've told them, you know, you know, you might not be able to eat too much raw, maybe have to eat cooked to start with, and then you can slowly add the raw, or, you know, all this chewing more and all that stuff, because they might not be used to eating as much, you know, raw. And they're doing the shakes in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of change for them, which could be causing the gas, right?
It could be happening. How long has this been going on? Like,
it's been going on for a couple months. I actually just started with the diet change. Then I added the probiotic. I actually did this for several people, added the probiotic, and some people said that they got worse, so I took them off their probiotic, and it got better, but it didn't go away. So, you know, gas doesn't completely go away. But
what kind of probiotic did you put them on?
I had a different one, the Claire Senior for one person. The other one was this Claire Complete. And then I had one from Megagenics that was particularly good for people with allergies that I put another person on. I can't remember what the name of that one is.
So here's what I would try in terms of probiotics is to get a Bifido formula, a four-strain Bifido. I think Claire has it, and I know Custom has it, and start there. If there's an issue where they've got some small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, then the lactobacillus and the lactate feeding bacteria in there can cause more gas, so you want to rule that out. When they eat, how quickly after they eat are they getting the gas?
You know, it's all throughout the day, so that I can't say. With one person, she's a little older, so hers happens when she goes from sitting to standing, you know, she gets embarrassed by that kind of stuff. So it's throughout the day. They haven't told me it's happening at a certain amount of time.
So it's the expelling of gas that's the problem, that they're having gas that needs to be expelled. What about bloating?
One of them is saying that her digestive tract seems off since she started this new eating, which I would assume that's bloating. She's saying her, you know, she doesn't feel right in her digestive tract.
Yeah, so I would say go through specific. Have you given them the digestive assessment forms to fill out?
No, I haven't. No.
Why would you do that? Because that's going to pinpoint areas. Because, you know, when you're talking to people, especially, you know, older people, they don't quite understand the way things work the way we do. And so their answers are not quite, you know, on track. And also, it takes a long time in a session to be able to ask all those questions. So I would give them the digestive assessments to fill out and see if you can get scores in each of the areas. And again, the subjective, I have gas. Okay, I did this. The gas got worse or better is, you know, over time, it's hard to tell because if you don't have like them rating, okay, my gas is at on a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 6 right now. And then 2 months later, they test it again, and they just go through the thing without looking at their previous answers, and now it's down to a 3. They may not have noticed that improvement as much when you ask it because you're asking it 2 months later. And they're going, how was I 2 months ago? Huh, I don't remember. You know what I mean? So I think the tests help you get a number, a score, to get it at the beginning, right? Worst case is you're going to do a lot of this stuff. You're going to do all the stuff you know how to do and give them an adjustment period. Have them, you know, break it down, blend more. Like you said, don't eat too much raw at the beginning in case there is some irritation and inflammation. And then you gradually see how that goes. And if it's not getting better, you may want to run a stool test to see what's going on in there.
Yeah, I will start with digestive. I'm dealing with different ages. The older woman is a special case because her system is very sensitive. So
very small, I would say simple meals, right? This is the time for the 3 to 5 foods at a meal at most, right? Okay. Keep it simple. Keep it easy to digest. In some cases, it's not just getting them off of gluten. It might be getting them off of grains. They may not be doing it. You may have to look at that modified SIBO-specific carbohydrate diet that I put together and go slowly with them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Okay. Let me see if there's any more questions that were put in. And says, may I put my membership on hold for a month or so after I signed up? I'm sorry. Yeah, write to my help desk at drritamarie.com and tell them no worries. They'll take care of that and you'll get the 2 extra months or whatever you need. I'm so sorry to hear that. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, just write to helpdesk at drritamarie.com. Christina is the one that usually answers there, and she'll totally help you with that. Yeah, so sorry, Anne. Wow. Like, who's on? Gail? Okay, I answered that. Rhonda, Lynn, Janine. And Janine, I'm glad to see you back. Janet. Let's see, Janet. You're still with your friends. Looks like you're going to be there. I sent paperwork for heavy metals for you and Dr. Rita Marie's review. Okay, so let's do that on one of the NEPT calls where we can put them up on the screen. Let's see. Okay, good. Rhonda got here. Good. You mean for the chat or the Q&A? Let's see. So Lynn put in some links to Metabolics and Sun Warrior. Leah. Okay, I'm having a hard time. Leah's giving me back on the hemoglobin A1C. 33 millimoles range, 22 to 42. Okay, so hers was 33 and the range is 22 to 42 in their range. So it is right in the middle of the range. This was after a 6.4 millimole fasting glucose, which is 6.4 is, I think somewhere in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. Let me pull it up. I have a thing to convert because otherwise I just don't have them in my head. I have kind of ranges. So if you go to what's the name of it? It's the Standard International Unit to U.S. Glucose. I'll give you a link to this when I find it. A conversion table, here we go, from glucose monitoring. Copy. So you said she was a 6.4, which would be 6.4 is about, oh, it cuts it off. Interesting. It's it's high. Yeah, 6.1 is 110. Oh, yeah, they just give you a little. 6.1 is 110, and a 6.7 is 120. So she has a high fasting glucose. Definitely has a high fasting glucose here. So, yeah, I would do those tests that I recommended for sure. For sure. Thank you. All right, let me go back. No, I have to find my way back. All right, good. Yeah, so Lynn says some people can react poorly to ingredients used in probiotic supplements or to naturally occurring amines in probiotic foods, right? So I would say stop using the probiotics, but also go ahead and look at just getting the Bifido, because most people are fine with that, and a pure one. Like, I really like the custom probiotics. I think Claire might have one too, but it's a powder, so they can use teeny, teeny, tiny amounts. There's no fillers, no binders, no nothing. Okay, so Eva has her hand up. No, Valerie, and well, Eva, I don't see your hand up. So Valerie has her hand up, and then I'm going to put your hand up too, Eva. Okay, so we'll go Valerie and then Eva. Hi, Valerie.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got several quick questions, sure. I think. I'm looking at my first person's genetic detoxification report,
mm-hmm.
and he's showing up as a red on B6 and zinc. And I'm wondering, is it safe to just go ahead and suggest that he supplement that, or is there something else I should do first?
I think with those, it's definitely, especially the zinc. And I would start with a liquid zinc and just start with small amounts. You have to always gauge, is this person sensitive? And those are, you know, you ask questions about that, like, how do you ever have bad reactions when you start something new? How does it work? Like, I have an ironclad stomach. I take 27 supplements every morning. It doesn't bother me. Great. You don't have to worry about them so much. But with the zinc, I would get a liquid zinc. You can start with 5 or 10 milligrams and work it up a little bit. And I probably, with that SNP profile, depending on what their symptomatology is, if you have a suspicion that they have low stomach acid, you want to get it up there. If you were to have done a Dutch test and you'd see some pathways out of balance. But with zinc and B6, it's so involved with sex hormones and, you know, the testosterone, estrogen, the conversions and all that, that they are really important. I mean, you could usually comfortably start people, unless he's got some sensitivities, with, you know, a B6, like a P5P, basic. I think usually the lowest ones I've seen are like 20, 25. You know, you can try that and see how he does. Try them separate days just to make sure that they don't have a bad reaction. But unlike methyl B12, where there's some issues with supplementing, if depending on their genes, I don't know of any first per se here. And I think you could probably help him with a lot of good functioning if you supplement.
Okay, great. Now, next question is, he's red on APOE4. So.
APOE4, okay.
I know he needs to avoid saturated fat, especially animal fat, but where does avocados, coconut, seeds, nuts, things like that fit on that?
Well, avocados mostly monounsaturated, you know, so I would say you don't want them on a high fat, 80% ketogenic type diet, obviously, but, and you definitely want them to avoid the animal fats. Coconut is a fair amount saturated. So I would go light on the coconut. I wouldn't be eating coconut every day or every meal. But the avocados and some of the nuts and seeds, most of those are going to be 6 and 3, omega 6 and 3, except for things like macadamia nuts will have a little bit more saturated, and so will cashews. So I wouldn't tell them to avoid these things, but I would say caution, you don't want them on a super high-fat diet.
Okay.
Yeah, but the coconut, be careful of, for sure. You know, not to avoid it completely, but just be careful with it.
Okay, and the last question has to do with gout. I'm aware of a person, my husband's coworker, who was on a keto diet, and that probably caused him to have gout.
Yeah, if it was the standard keto bacon, butter, you know, lots of meat diet, sure, that would definitely aggravate gout if he has a tendency to gout, for sure.
Right. I don't understand the mechanism of gout, and I'm wondering, what if a person really hasn't increased their protein and they may have gout?
Well, you know, it could be just accumulative over the years that it's exceeding their threshold, and now it does. It's purines, and purines are in the diet are going to create these gouty crystals when they crystallize out. So even too many legumes can create a gout situation. But here's the thing. Vitamin B6 deficiency is very common. B6 and magnesium as well, but mostly B6 in helping to eliminate those crystals. So I would, you know, for sure be looking at the dietary things that you know how to do and then look at maybe B6 supplementation, possibly magnesium too.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, that brought up one more question. Vertigo,
sure.
With calcium carbonate crystals in the inner ear, I believe?
It can be. I mean, there's a lot. Excuse me. There's central vertigo, and there's peripheral vertigo. So you have to be able to differentiate. Central vertigo would be where it's happening inside, you know, cerebellum, which is the balance center in the brain, and some internal stuff. And then the external, the more peripheral, is more when there's crystals in the ear. So it's either an ear problem or a brain problem.
Okay, and I just heard of this yesterday. He has it's peripheral, and the doctor diagnosed, I believe, calcium carbonate crystals in his ear. So I was wondering if magnesium would help to offset that.
Yeah, and yes, and you just need to look at where is he getting all the let me step back a second. The calcium carbonate crystals, so a lot of people are taking Tums and other alkaline types of calcium, and that can be a trigger. So you want to make sure that he isn't taking Tums or his supplements don't contain calcium carbonate, and if that's the case, you want to get him off of that. Calcium requires an acidic environment in the stomach to be able to be absorbed, but calcium is also very alkalizing in that when somebody's on a more acidic type diet, acidic residue diet, they're going to be drawing calcium out of their bones. So it's when you see that there's calcium deposit somewhere, whether it's in a shoulder, whether it's in a knee, whether it's in the ear, you want to be thinking about where did that calcium come from? Did it come from a calcium excess in the diet? Like, you know, somebody's taking in a lot of oyster shell or Tums or other forms like that in the diet, or is it actually being drawn from the bones? So getting them on an alkaline diet, very important as well. And magnesium is part of that because magnesium will help to alkalize as well.
Okay. I suspect he's been taking some calcium, and it would probably be a cheap form.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask that before I said anything to him because he's an endurer, and everything comes out no.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to go there unless I had a good reason to.
Yep. Got it.
Okay. Thank you.
And you don't have to take him off his calcium necessarily unless he is excessive, and most people are excessive. We really don't need more than 500 milligrams of calcium a day unless you're on an alkaline diet, an acidic diet that's drawing it out of the bone. You know, high-protein diets require more, and a lot of people are just, like, buying these supplements that are loaded with calcium. And so shifting the form of it and getting him to, I would say, getting them off of calcium supplements and getting them on more of those nourishing herbs could be helpful, like nettles and horsetail and alfalfa and, you know, some of the things that have silica and other things to support alkalinity and bone health. And I know we're going off the track with bone health, but my concern is bone health when I see something like that.
Well, see, what fits in there also is he has had kidney stones.
Ooh.
So
yes, get him off the calcium.
A lot of this is fitting together.
Yes, and B6 and magnesium, again, very important for drawing out, whether they're uric acid stones or oxalate stones. B6 and magnesium help to pull those out.
Okay.
They help you to eliminate the excess so they don't build up. So, yeah, that's all fitting together. And my guess is that he probably has a little bit of bone loss as well as a result of all this.
Okay, yeah, and that would mean that the doctor would put him on calcium.
Yeah, you put him on calcium, right.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenging one to fit. Okay, so he supposed, I told him about spinach, and he had been eating a lot of spinach.
Okay.
And so he was going to cut back some, but the packages he buys are full of spinach, so.
Yeah.
It's an interesting loop we're in.
Switch to arugula, low oxalate, low uric acid,
alkalizing,
nitric oxide, opens up the blood vessels, more erections, maybe throw that at them, I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, Eva, let me open your line. Hi, Eva.
On the phone, Dr. Risa Marie.
Yes, hi.
Hi, I'm on the phone.
Whoops. Oh, she's on some, what? She just disappeared. Let me see. Whoops, she's gone. All right. Well, when she comes back, we'll see if she can come on. Let me go back to the Q&A. All right, so we have Elaine. No questions, just want to say thank you for all the information and forms and scorecards you provide in NEPT modules. Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. Those things took me 15 years over, you know, doing and changing and doing all this stuff, and I want somebody else to benefit besides me. So you're welcome. Cindy says she's finally able to start the core classes. Yay! I'm glad you're here. Yay! And make sure that you get, if you just started, make sure you also contact Christina and tell her that, you know, see if we can get your access to these calls extended. Okay? Because you should have them. I think you get them for 6 months. So I want to make sure you have enough. So once you get started, yay! I'm so glad that you're here. Yay! All right. So. All right, so that's that. Let me look on the chat.
I also wanted to make sure, and if anybody else is in NEPT Core, I believe it's this Thursday you're doing a call.
Yeah, so here's the thing with you guys in Core, if anybody else is on, right, we have hearing from that from so many people. I mean, we offer this thing in November, right, and it's the end of the year and everybody's got such busy stuff. Nobody's really able. So we're going to do a kickoff call for Core next week, and that should be going out. The email should be going out about that. So we'll get everybody together.
It's not this Thursday?
When is it? I don't know. Has the email not gone out? Because I just saw a thing from Jazzy saying that we want to.
Yeah, I know. I have it for this Thursday, the 21st.
Well, make sure that those reminders go out.
Yep. I thought I wrote.
Didn't I write the first one? Like, hey.
Yep.
I remember writing it. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Can we? Oh, boy. Okay. Well, yeah. So get on. We may have to individually contact people to make sure that they know. And also want to make sure that the people who signed up for it last year who didn't actually get started can get on there, too, so we get everybody started at the same time.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Who else? Let's see. Does Claire ship products to the UK? It's Klaire. I'm not sure. I know Custom Probiotics does. If you go through Dr. Supplement Store, Lynn, if you put that in there, our Dr. Supplement Store, they won't allow practitioners to sign up as practitioners in Europe. They're still working out some of those details, but you can actually order them through my account. And you can give your client my account number too to order it through. And I'm pretty sure they ship all international. And you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think they do. I know in the case of Claire, they actually have a UK distributor.
Okay, good. Yeah,
they have distributors around the world, so I put that link in the chat too.
Okay, thank you. Leah, what's the safe upper limit of B6, P5P, as a poor methylator feels good on 25? Yeah, I would say You know, it really depends, right? There have been some studies that show when you go over 500 milligrams of the pyridoxine hydrochloride that you can start to get some peripheral neuropathies. And there have been like, I don't know, 3 cases. So it's quoted all the time. There's also some studies that show that high doses of B6 will help with peripheral neuropathies. I generally do between 25 and 50. I feel comfortable with that. But if there's a particular case where I feel like they need more, I would feel comfortable going 50 to 100. But usually I stick to 25 to 50. All right. Yeah, it doesn't look like it went out. So we need to get that out ASAP if that's on Thursday. I just saw Jazzy comment on that in one of the chats, but that needs to get going. Okay, so Lynn, instead, it's, there you go. Okay, good. Great. Let me see if anybody else put in questions in here, and let's see if Eva came back. Okay. All right. Let's see who else is here. No more questions. Star 2 raises your hand. Otherwise, we'll call it a day. There's got to be more questions, you guys. Yay. Is this helpful? There's Julie. Hi, Julie. I sent you an email the other day, Julie. Hoping to hear back from you. Yay. So glad to see you here. Who has questions, comments? Anything I can support you with? Any questions about the content in the programs? Any questions about your particular clients and an application of that? I love the questions, you know, Valerie and Leah and Gail had about particular clients. And that's the kind of stuff I love to answer. So I'll give you a second. Star 2 raises your hand. And let's see if there's any more questions. How do I unmute on the phone? You're not on the phone right now. Let me see. The only one I could think of, there's one that says anonymous. There's one in Austin, Texas, Taylor Caulfield. Is that you, Eva? Eva? Is that you, Eva? No? Okay. So what you can do, Eva, is you can put your hand up, star 2, or you can unmute yourself. You can do, let me put it in Q&A mode so you can unmute yourself. Star 7 will unmute yourself. So if you feel like I'm not seeing your hand up, do a star 7. Oh, there's Eva. She just came in again. Okay.
Am I unmuted now?
You are, but I'm hearing you twice. You may have.
Okay, I'm going to shut down my computer.
Okay.
Because I'm not able to get my computer.
No. Where you're here, where yes. I hear you is on the web, on the web call.
My web is not able to connect to the speaker again,
okay.
So I had you in both areas, so that's why you're having that feedback. So, yeah, thank you. Sorry about that. I was trying star 6 and it wasn't working, and I'm like, okay, what am I doing wrong? So sorry about that. And yes, the Taylor Caulfield.
By the way, star 7 on YouTube.
Okay, so it is the Austin, Texas. That's my number, the Taylor.
Okay, copy. Got it. Okay.
So it's the family's name, and it's always going to be confusing. So I apologize.
Okay, now I'll remember though. I have a knack for remembering pseudonyms on Instantel seminars. So.
Okay, great. So I have 2 questions. Well, actually, one is a very long question, and the other one is somewhat complicated, but. Is it possible for someone to start having candida issue after they get a tattoo and if their diet changes? My daughter just went to college. You know, she's got all the pandas and all the other issues, and she is not feeling good because I'm not cooking for her and she's not taking any supplements. But, of course, as a free bird, she went and got a tattoo. And now she's having her symptoms again. And so I had her doctor run all the tests, and she is, convinced that she has some kind of a rheumatoid or lupus. And yes, that came positive. So we have to see a neurologist, but they also ran the candida titers, which they always do, and they are off the chart. And we've never had that issue before.
Yeah.
So my question is, how quickly after somebody, you know, maybe in 5 months, could you just have this giant active chronic condition of candida?
Yeah,
would it be because she,
when you eat crap food after having been taking care of my mom eating good food for all this time, and your system goes away, and then adding the tattoo to it, I don't know that there's a direct link between candida and a tattoo, but it's a stress on the body. So all of a sudden the liver's having to work overtime to try to deal with this poison, basically, that's been put in the system. And I hear you, my kids did the same stupid thing, which I think is really dumb, but, you know, it's crazy to me, but they did it, and now you, the body has to deal with it. And so whenever we add a new stress to the system, and there's already an existing stress that the body's trying to handle, trying to work on, it's going to divert its attention usually to the new stress or to the more severe stress. So it's like, okay, we have this these resources for handling the stress of the new diet, and then she adds on top of it this chemical poison in her bloodstream, and her resources go to handle that. That's the best explanation that I can think of for it. So, you know, you can't get rid of that, the tattoo. But you can certainly help her support her liver, you know, good liver support, antioxidant support for the liver, milk thistle, you know, dandelion.
If she was taken, yes, I sent everything with her. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
So, so my question is, because the doctor wants her to take antifungal for 4 days, for 8 days, would you send some binders in between, because obviously that's going to throw her body into a spin. What would be the best binder for somebody that's in college that you think they need one dose at evening so they don't have to take it throughout the day? And, you know, what's your
binder
recommendation?
Why are you thinking binder? Tell me what you mean.
Because of the die-off of candida, if they're going to try to, she normally has really bad reactions to this.
Okay, got it.
She
okay,
has crying spells. Her candida is affecting her neurologically because that's her weakest area because of her PANDAS and her blood-brain barrier being, you know, when it's not tight junctions everywhere, then she has neurological. So the tics are back and she's having issues with memory and not being able to recall words, and, you know, it's not like I'm having a, you know, yeast infection and I'm having a rectal itching or things.
It's just minor stuff. It's major. Yeah.
Right.
So a binder that would, you know, something like, zeolite could be good. Charcoal before, modified citric pectin. Although that's a pretty slow one, but those all can be binding. And there's a company, there's one from Health Force that they used to have. They've changed their stuff so much since.
I'm familiar with the zeolite, so I think that's what I'm going to probably go with.
I think the zeolite powder, just plain, because there is a really good intestinal binder from Health Force, but it's so gross. And she's probably not going to want to keep
it
black.
She's not going to
get it in half this, but it's kind of gross, and I don't recommend it except to people who – I don't recommend it to the faint of heart, let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah, she can deal with stevia taste and anything like that. It's just, no, I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to use it. So that's good to know. So I think the zeolite, it has no flavor. So she
can add it
to even salty thing that she wants to drink.
Yeah, but you don't want to take it with food, though. You want to take
it. Right. It's an at night. Yeah,
oh, yeah,
something to down it before she goes to sleep.
Wants in it, but, you know, to make it palatable. But it's not, it doesn't have a flavor, so it's pretty easy to take.
Right. Okay, so.
It's capsule powder, so the capsules will.
Yeah, I think the one I know it's from, it's a powder form. It's like an ash almost looking thing, so.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. My next question is my complicated issue. So you're going to be really happy with your information about the ketogenic diet that everyone is doing. And I was doing modified. I wasn't doing the full ketogenic diet with a lot of fats. But I just had my blood work done with Dr. Allen's through your lab work. And I did the extensive cardiovascular panel, and it scared me. It scared me. The numbers are sky high for every kind of a lipid that you can see. So I have lowered my hemoglobin A1C went to 4.8, so I was able to control that. But I am ApoE3-4,
not okay. 4, but 3, 4, so I have to be moderate fat. But the numbers are so high, especially like the small particle, it's really high, the LDLs, and, you know, my cholesterol is, the good cholesterol is low, high. And, I mean, in my opinion, the triglycerides on a keto at 131 are still high.
Whoa, that's, so, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's still
what
high.
What about inside, the LPA, the LP little A?
The LP little A, it is, I'm just going to give you the full numbers. The cholesterol is 276. The LDL is 45. The LDL cholesterol, which is the low particle, is 203.
Wow.
Yes, the LDL particle numbers, which is the measure, the size of it and how many, it's 2,480. That's twice as the high number.
Yeah.
So, super high numbers. The LDL small is 497. That's twice as what the upper range is. The medium particles is 790. So, my question to you is,
what, didn't you get the LPA? There's one called LP little A.
Yes, I have it. That's fine. That's I don't have that genetic.
Good.
Okay, 69.
So this is much more amenable to you. Switching things up. So clearly, whatever
yes.
modified keto you were doing that included a lot of animal products, if you have a 3-4, probably needs to be modified further.
Yes.
Have you done fast? I know you've done intermittent fasting, like 16-hour
yes.
fasting.
Yes.
Have you done any 5-day fasts?
Yes, I did a full day 5-day fast, but it's been almost a year ago. So I did water only. I do, and my body, Lynn told me how to use that correctly. So my body has PCOS. I've always had it. My body had it their whole life. So I'm always looking at the sugar and the glucose
yeah.
and the insulin and all this other stuff. So that's why I chose that diet. But I have a difficult time with having a lot of vegetable fiber because I get bloated, I gurgle, I can't process any of that. So that's why I lean towards vegetables also, but I had higher fat content than I needed to do. My other problem is also, and I don't drink a lot. I drink very rarely, and it looks as though I'm an alcoholic. So I have beginning of liver, fatty liver, because my MCH is 33.3, which is high. And it looks like it. So the numbers that I'm
What's
looking at for my liver.
Did you do a GGT?
I am trying to see.
The point of the liver enzymes. That's really indicative of alcohol. You know, and I'm looking at your genes. You'd want to know, do you have, you know, a lack of ability to break down alcohol, which means you shouldn't be having any. And I would not, you know, given your PCOS background,
yeah.
you would just say.
I gave
know,
it up. I
give
gave it up
completely.
After the numbers. Yep.
Yeah, give it up completely.
I'm like, I should at least have a fun time if I'm going to have numbers like this, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So there's some genetics at play, clearly, right, and early on stuff.
Right.
But I would say if you're getting gassy and bloated from the vegetables, then you really need to look at what's going on in your gut and how do you heal that.
Yeah, I've been working on this for the last 5 years, I think, with the gastritis and the, you know, the inflammatory bowel disease and all those things. So this was my primary thing. But I also now have hypothyroid that I didn't know I had. So
I was going to ask about now I forget. Go ahead and ask because you said about the thyroid.
So I was going to say, could the hypothyroid also be an effective marker for the lipids, or did the lipids go in first? Because all of it obviously is working against something, right?
Yeah. So
and,
clearly, hypothyroid will raise your cholesterol for sure. I mean, definitely.
Okay.
What was it like? What were your numbers the last time you did in terms of the lipids? Were they slightly off? Were they completely fine?
They were slightly off, but the, you know, what went up actually was the total cholesterol, and what went up dramatically was the LDL cholesterol. It was in 100 and maybe 40s, and now it's 203.
Yeah.
And the cholesterol was 230, now it's 276.
So one of the
I never.
I'm sorry. One of the numbers.
I was just going to say, I never had the other numbers done, so
the
ratios
done,
were
right.
always off, so I didn't know. I did improve the glucose, and then hemoglobin A1C is 4.8, so that when, there's 10%, 10 points reduction, so that's good, but the insulin is still high at 6.8.
Fasting 6.8?
So,
yeah.
Yes. That's still high. So very confusing. But I think what I'm going to start off with is definitely do a cleanse, green cleanse with juices and fasting in between, and get on some thyroid medication. That's my first thing that I think I'm going to do.
Yeah, you might look also, because, I don't know how high your numbers are for thyroid, and you can't just assume going on thyroid medication is going to help. First of all, it's a known thing that, some people are sensitive to going on like a keto type diet, the way it's typically taught,
and you
will have thyroid issues as a result. So what are the issues? Is it elevated TSH? Is it low T3? What exactly is the
TSH is 4.72. That's the first time I've always had my numbers in around 1 point something to 2.
Okay.
And the T4, they only measure T4 free, which is 1, and the T3 free is 2.8. So the numbers are not that bad. The conversion is a little bit off.
You're a little bit off on the conversion, but yeah.
No antibodies, so that's good.
Okay.
But the
and you
want to
assume resistance.
Yeah.
You want to assume you have the thyroid resistance. So you want to look at your vitamin A levels. You want to look at your homocysteine levels. And of course,
homocysteine is 7.3.
What's that? What's 7.3?
Homocysteine is
7.3. Okay. So
I normally run really low homocysteine. I usually.
So there's an inflammation going on here. There's something. Yeah. So normally it's lower than that.
Yes, it's usually in fours. So that's why they always wanted to bring the homocysteine up, because I wasn't making the glutathione. Now, the first time I've ever seen my homocysteine being at 7.3. So that makes me a little bit concerned, because it's always so low. Now it's up.
Yeah, something. Right? So you need to shift your diet around. The diet clearly didn't work for you. Okay.
Yes.
And you need to find what does work. And I think, like, meal replacements, shake kind of things, two shake replacements in a good healthy meal. It's got to be balanced. It's really challenging if you don't tolerate too much fat and you don't tolerate carbs, because you have to get calories from somewhere. But I would certainly be looking at that. I would be looking at some, shakes as a replacement, just to try to get you in balance, but also to calm your digestion down, with maybe green powders in there that aren't going to hurt, and green juices, like you said, like have a green juice as a base and then put protein powders and things in there to support the healing of both your liver and your gut, because you need both.
Right.
So I wouldn't just do straight juice, because that may aggravate the sugars, even if it's just plain.
Yes.
Right. But adding, some fiber to it that you tolerate, whether it's, chia, ground flax, whether it's, I've been using glucomannan. I really like that as a fiber. And also, adding green powders to that to fortify it.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I actually listened to the digestive module, because that's where I got stuck, so I'm moving forward with that.
Good.
So I have gotten some of the good information about calming down the inflammation.
Another good protein I just found, protein powder, it's a, it's kind of a plant-based collagen promoter, and it's from amazing grasses, and it's called GLOW. And it's got all these herbs and stuff in there.
G-L-O?
G-L-O-W. Amazing grass.
Okay.
Whoa. And they come in 3 different flavors, and they're all sweetened with either monk fruit or stevia. They're not, there's no sweetener in them. 0 carbs. And then all the rest is this, good protein, like 15 grams of protein. So check it out. Sun Warrior is about to come out with one as well. But it would help, because the collagen formers will help to heal your gut as well. And then looking at the stages that we lay out for you for healing gut. Okay. And then also listen to Dr. Allen's advanced topic that he did in our advanced clinical resources. He did one on the advanced lipid panel and all his suggestions in terms of nutrients to bring things into balance. Omega
3. I actually bought his program.
Okay, good.
So I have all that information, and I'm going to have to add the niacin, which I'm flushing with. I'm taking small doses several times a day to see if that's going to help.
To see if it helps. Yep.
Yeah, I also wanted to add niacin,
might raise your blood sugar if you do too much niacin.
Okay. Even the flushing one.
Either one. Either one. They can raise your blood. And you just have to watch. If your blood sugar starts to elevate up, then it's too much niacin. But the CoQ10 is super important. The zinc is certainly important. And omega-3s, you may need to get up.
Yeah,
to like
my omega panel actually was good. It was optimal, the omega-3 to 6, because I do take actually 3 to 4 grams of
You're already doing that.
Combination. Yeah. So I've done it for many years, but I eat chia seeds. That's my breakfast usually every morning, and I do tolerate that.
So good.
That's good.
If you signed up for his program, you can get on his little group, the little Facebook group,
and just
throw in some questions about that in the chat there. He may give you some additional insights.
Yes, they also look for people to like be part of their education thing so they can do it on the webcast. So I might just give them to go ahead and see what he sees as part of the lipid issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before I go, I'm preparing the vitamin K for the ERC people, and I wanted to add the issue with calcification and calcium that was for the lady before. I didn't get her name. They have a lot of studies coming out with upper dosage of vitamin K, the MK7, K2, and that actually reduces the calcification. So like kidney stone and any other.
How high are you talking?
300. It's 300, and actually that product is, you can get it from your store. And the one that I was looking at specifically, their information, because they pulled it, it's from the Microbiome Labs, and the product is called MyoMax, and it's a 300 milligram blend of K2, but it is the MK7 form, which is the gold standard, or they can increase their natto, but it has to be almost tablespoon every day, which not a lot of people will do it, but they are able to see the calcification reduced in the arteries and the kidney stones. So it could be also a possibility for the client that has that problem.
You can also add that with, those calcific tendinitis situations.
Yes.
Frozen shoulder as a result of a calcific tendinitis. Good to know.
Yes. Okay.
Good. Great. Thank you so much,
Valerie.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, so Valerie.
That was really interesting. I appreciate her comment on that K2.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look into that. But I also raised my hand again because I haven't really formulated my questions here yet. I'm just starting to delve into glutathione.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing, like this one guy I'm working with, I'm looking at his genetic reports, and there's lots of things coming up about glutathione.
Yeah.
So can you just give a good general overview of how do you improve it? How do you check it? How do you watch for it if it's coming up on a lot of genes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we see it in a lot of genes. You do have to be careful with just going, hey, let's just give a lot of glutathione. And I don't have time to go into that pathway per se, but that whole sulfur metabolism pathway, if you give too much glutathione, the body's own ability to make it backs up. So you have all this extra sulfur groups, and then they go down these other pathways and could create like excess sulfites and sulfates, which could lead to, brain fog and other kinds of problems. So it's really important to always be supplementing with just the right amount of things so it doesn't cause a backup in the body. That said, with glutathione, testing-wise, on the Dutch test, they test a marker that's an indicator, and also on the organic acid test, there's a marker that's an indicator. I've never actually done it separately. I bet there are labs that would do it, worth looking into, and I don't remember the exact marker, but there's a couple of markers on there, actually, on the oat test and then one on the Dutch test that will give you an indication of that. I usually go low and slow with glutathione supplementation. I'll start with liposomal. I'm a big fan of the liposomal because it gets in real easily, plus you can control the dose, and just start with a few drops and increase it. Now, what happens if people get too much glutathione? Sometimes they do get fatigued, they get brain foggy, they can get achy. So you want to be careful about that. And they don't necessarily attribute it to the fact that they just added a bunch of glutathione because it's subtle, you know, and it's, oh, that's good for me. Why would that give me that or whatever? So, and it could take days. So some people, you know, will go if they're really super deficient and get an IV glutathione. And I would recommend that in cases where somebody's, you know, showing severe signs of glutathione deficiency. But I would say doing it that way, the other way to do it is to not give the preformed glutathione, but to give NAC, NAC, and acetylcysteine. And that gives you all the precursors, and then the body can make it. So those are a couple of ways to supplement with glutathione.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Absolutely. Cool. Let's see. So I'm going to see if there's any other questions. Let's see, Cindy, yay. Leah, in autoimmune situation, I believe parietal cells can renew over time if supported, yes. In your opinion, will it be a case to gently always support it with a digestive enzyme? Yeah, so the parietal cells are in the stomach. Digestive enzymes usually work within the small intestine, the upper part of the duodenum. I would be supporting the stomach with its own production of making hydrochloric acid, but also parietal cells produce intrinsic factor for B12 absorption. For a lot of folks, once they're damaged, that damage, you know, they don't really respond to taking oral B12. You need to do liposomal or sublingual or topical. So that's another way to do it. And with your person, maybe the patch might work. You know, get a vitamin B12 patch. That's what I did with my son, and it worked, like, phenomenally. But, again, it can get in the system quickly, so we're going to watch for her side effects. So I think it's always important, but not necessarily a digestive enzyme. I think it's always important if there's been some, you know, gastritis and irritation and damage to parietal cells. I'm assuming they're also there's going to be a problem with stomach acid and with intrinsic factor. And so supporting a person that has autoimmune disease with healing the leaky gut, looking for heavy metals, looking for the stressors on the system, all the things that go into helping somebody with an autoimmune disease, go for that. But plus supporting the stomach lining. So mucilaginous things, sometimes DGL, diglycerizinated licorice, or slippery elm, or what's the name of that stuff? Plantain or other things, marshmallow, things like that, that can help support it. Sometimes you have to be careful with somebody who has current gastritis or has had gastritis or an ulcer in giving a digestive enzyme with protease, because the protease can actually break down protein. And if their mucus lining in their stomach is disrupted, then the digestive enzyme may actually burn and cause them to have a problem. So always go slowly with somebody who has a history of gastritis or ulcer and burning sensations, is to go very slowly with digestive enzymes and just see how they go. And if it's with food, you want to make sure it's with a good bolus of food and not take them in between, because it can aggravate the stomach. I hope that helps. Okay. Blah, 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 blah. Let's see. So Lynn gave Christina this thing. Good. Not sure you meant by popping the insulin test in. I'm not sure what that means. I didn't see that. Oh, like where to get it? It's just insulin. It's just insulin. And you're in England, so you'd have to work with whatever. Like here, we could send them to Dr. Allen's lab and get their stuff done, or direct labs or something. Lynn put in the amazing glow. What group did she join? Kim, Dr. Allen Hopkins is, he has a lab course that he was offering a special where you got this big panel of tests along with the course, and that's what she joined. And if you want, we can give don't we have a link to that course, Lynn? I don't know if he's still offering it or what, but we can get a link from Dr. Allen for that course, because we did a lab thing with him months ago where we offered it. We're going to do another one because he's pretty amazing. All right, so Q&A, I'll go again. Okay, Elaine, trying to repair my thyroid and adrenals due to losing my mom in high stress as I cared for her over the last few years. I'm so sorry. Taking pure encapsulations, D3, 5000, Zymogen, Mag Citrate, Designs for Health, Multi, Zymogen, Be Active, Complimented, aside from typical symptoms and having crazy nightmares and twitching eyelids, suggestions. Ooh, you know, if you want to find out why, right? And if it's one of the supplements you added, you want to be able to remove it. I'm not familiar. I know Zymogen and Designs for Health, a lot of their stuff do have excipients in them, so you got to be careful with that. And I know I'm not familiar with complementary scripts, but I would be removing them one at a time to see if you're getting any of that. So, you know, it's hard to say just by looking at your supplement list, but, and when did the symptoms start? Did you start to get these symptoms as you, right after you added these or slowly over time? So whenever any client or patient, including yourself, adds a bunch of stuff, makes a bunch of changes all at once, then you're going to be suspicious, and you either have to pull all those out and then add things one at a time and see, but you pull them out long enough for the symptoms to go away, and then you put them back in one at a time. Okay. All right. Chat. All right. And Valerie, I put your hand down. I forgot to put your hand down, so I think that's why it was still up. Anybody else? We have a couple more minutes. Otherwise, I'm going to go and grab myself a little lunch before my next round of calls. Valerie, okay. Great. Hi, Valerie.
One more question. I'm running across something I've never heard of before called glucoraphanin.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a supplement?
It's actually a constituent of sulforaphane. So with sulforaphane, I mean, and I can't remember the exact, it's one of that family, which sulforaphane being, you know, a detox type of thing that happens in the liver, and it's a very good and supported, protects against, you know, cancers, and it helps support detox. So it's one of those, and like I said, I don't remember the exact link and, you know, which one's first and whatnot, but it's in that sulforaphane family. How did you find that?
Lynn's just put something up. I see. But it sounds like it's also some kind of a supplement you can get.
Oh, yeah, you can usually supplement anything, right? If there's something you can supplement with it. Yeah, this is what Lynn put in. It's a glucosinate found in broccoli, cauliflower, mustard seeds, and converted to sulforaphane by myristinase. So, thank you. It's the precursor to sulforaphane. That's
okay.
The piece I was not remembering. Yeah, so it's basically, they sell supplements, right? But it's found in broccoli, cauliflower, mustard, right? It's found in all the brassicas, and it's activated by myristinase. And remember, we talked a bunch about how raw cruciferous,
right. You
can chew them and it breaks it down, it activates myristinase. But with cooked, what you want to do is chop them up first to activate the myristinase.
Right,
let that
for 45 minutes,
exactly, and that's how you get more sulforaphane. So yeah, they're saying you can actually get that as a supplement, which is kind of interesting versus sulforaphane. But it may be that the sulforaphane isn't able to stay stable when they turn it into a supplement.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, thank you. One last time here. Okay. And one last here. Put Valerie down. Anybody else? Last chance. Going once. Going twice. All right. I am going to sign off. I'm going to open up everybody's line so we can all say goodbye to each other on the count of three. Thank you so much for being here. Great questions. I think we all learned a lot by being here. If you have a comment about that, I'd love to hear it. If you found this to be helpful, you know, hearing other people's questions, and you don't have to have a question to come to these calls and get benefit. So on the count of three, I'm going to open up the lines and I'm going to say a one, two, and three. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See you soon.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome.